Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. Thank you so much for spending part of your day with me. Sometimes headlines are alarmist, and I'm not for that. But sometimes headlines are alarming and point us to something we should know. The Interagency Coordination Group of the Antimicrobial Resistance, with support from the World Health Organization, warns that in a worst-case scenario, it's estimated that by 2050, there could be 10 million deaths per year globally if there is no global effort to contain antimicrobial resistance. The report titled No Time to Wait states, quote, that alarming levels of antimicrobial resistance have been reported in countries of all income levels, with the result that common diseases are becoming untreatable and life-saving medical procedures riskier to perform. Infectious disease specialist Dr. Matt McCarthy is on the forefront of a clinical trial which tests a new antibiotic that fights bacteria that has become resistant to drugs. In his new book, Superbugs: The Race to Stop an Epidemic, McCarthy unpacks the history of bacteria and antibiotics and details a new way to fight superbugs. McCarthy is an assistant professor of medicine at Weill Cornell and a staff physician at New York Presbyterian Hospital and in studio with me right now. Doctor, thanks for coming by.
Well, thanks so much for having me.
So let's just define terms. I like to do this at the top of every medical segment. When you say superbug, what do you mean?
Oh, superbugs means different things to different people. To me, it is any one of the pathogens in our environment, whether it's a bacteria, fungus, parasite, that has become resistant to the normal drugs that we use to treat them. And the problem is that it used to be a relatively small number of superbugs in our environment, but now they're everywhere.
And why are they everywhere?
Well, there's a number of reasons for this. Part of it is that we've been using antibiotics a bit inappropriately. We've been using them in agriculture and in farming. We've been prescribing them as doctors. We're guilty of it too, overprescribing. And the result is every time you expose one of these pathogens or microbes to an antibiotic, it can evolve to figure out how to evade it, how to get around it. And I write about in my book these efflux pumps, which are microscopic vacuum cleaners, which can suck up any antibiotic and spit it out. I also talk about these enzymes that bacteria are developing to chop up the antibiotics we make. And so what I really wanted to got me interested in this was a patient a few years ago said, why is it so hard to make an antibiotic? And that's what I spent the last 5 years thinking about and working on and getting an answer to that question.
And listeners, as we have this conversation and during the course of this conversation, if you have a question for Dr. McCarthy, feel free to give us a call, 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. We're discussing superbugs and his new book, Superbugs, The Race to Stop an Epidemic. Now, you write in your book, you first saw a superbug when you were in medical school. When was that and what was that situation?
You know, I went to Harvard for medical school, and the way the school works is the first 2 years you're in a classroom, and then in year three they throw you into the hospital. Mm-hmm. And they hand you a pair of scrubs and say, go get them. And on my first day I saw a patient who had MRSA, which is probably the most well-known superbug. And the patient had an infection that had gotten into the bloodstream. And for anyone who's familiar with MRSA, they know that it can go to places where it shouldn't. And it can go to the heart and the bones. It can go all over the place. I think just the other day, Johnny Depp came out and said he had it in his finger. Mm-hmm. And we get especially worried when it's in the finger or the face. And the antibiotics have to be adjusted accordingly to make sure we eradicate what can be an incredibly dangerous and life-threatening infection.
What's particular about the finger or the face?
You know, the blood vessels are very small there. And whenever we give a patient an antibiotic, we have to think about these very technical terms like pharmacokinetics and pharmacodynamics. But what that means to the layperson is we got to make sure that the drug gets to the bug. And that's not always an easy thing to do. And we have infectious disease specialists who spend their lives figuring out how do we dose these things appropriately. And that's become a much more important job in the last few years because of this exponential expansion of superbugs that what once was a rare occurrence is now something very common. And I can say I was at the hospital this morning treating patients who have superbugs. And while it is a concerning issue, you know, when I step into the hospital every morning, I'm confident we're going to cure these patients. This is something that I want people to pay attention to, but not to be fearful of. We are working very hard to figure out ways to conquer this.
That was sort of my point about don't be alarmist, but pay attention to something that is alarming. I asked you about medical school because I thought, all right, you have all this experience under your belt, you have all this research, and now when you look back, was there a point in time in history that the medical community could have thwarted this, could have intervened so that we didn't get to this point?
Absolutely. You know, the first commercially available antibiotic was penicillin, which came out in the 1940s. And then the 1950s was this period that we now refer to as the golden era of drug development. We were coming out with new drugs. Seemed like every few months there was another life-saving treatment. And what I write about is that a number of prominent scientists came out in the 60s and said, we got this. We are figuring out how to conquer infection in humans, and it's time to move on to bigger issues like heart disease and cancer. And so the short answer is that we took our eye off the ball and we started focusing on these other conditions. And while that was happening, the bacteria and fungi and parasites were multiplying, and they were figuring out ways to evade what drugs we already had. And by the time we recognized the problem, we were behind the proverbial eight ball, and we were playing catch up. And that's why you see these doomsday scenarios being thrown out of 10 million people a year dying. And part of that is to get people to pay attention to how serious this is. And I unquestionably think this is the most important medical issue of our lifetimes.
Our number is 212-433-9692, 212-433-WNYC. If you have any questions during the course of this conversation with Dr. Matt McCarthy, the name of his book is Superbugs, The Race to Stop an Epidemic. There was an interesting line in your book that you said that superbugs evolved in a way we didn't expect, right? We sort of, my layperson's understanding of evolution is it's not, you know, survival of the fittest, it's the survival of the one that can adapt. So how did it evolved in a way that we didn't expect?
Well, in the early years of superbugs, which they really started coming out in the 1960s, we became very good at figuring out what would happen, for example, if you exposed MRSA to a drug like vancomycin. And there were these certain enzymes that they were producing. But then they got really good at coming up with new enzymes. And now they have these unique mutations called porin mutations, which can cause drugs that we give them to leach out of the bacteria. No one was predicting that. There are also a number of enzymes that have the bacteria are using that involve zinc and involve other precious metals that we weren't prepared for. And as a result, we've got a number of antibiotics in the pipeline that are now addressing them, but they weren't in the pipeline in time to save thousands of patients.
You write about antibiotics that it can be difficult to precisely define what constitutes one. So when experts like yourself refer to antibiotics, what are they referring to?
Very simply put, I think of any drug that will kill the bacteria without killing us. And so I use, as an example, something like bleach. Well, that could wipe out a whole swath of mm-hmm. pathogens, but it also might do a lot of damage to us in the process. And right now, we're using some drugs that are really harsh. And the one that I start my book off mm-hmm. with is called colistin.
Yeah.
And that's a drug that we used to use in the 1960s and 70s, but then it fell out of favor because it was so toxic. Now, when you walk into a hospital, you might be getting colistin because we are running out of options, and that's one that is incredibly harsh. People think of it as a detergent, essentially, but it can help some patients. And so we are at this breaking point where we're saying, look at the drugs we're being forced to use. We must come up with new antibiotics. And the difficult part of this is that Big Pharma isn't particularly interested in making new antibiotics.
Because as you write, antibiotics, they don't make a lot of money for drug companies.
They are by definition a market failure. And what I mean by that is if you look at the supply and demand, there's clearly a demand, but the companies are not making a sufficient profit off of this. And what we're seeing is that we have to come up with new incentives mm-hmm. to get them to do that, to make these drugs that patients so desperately need.
My guest is Dr. Matt McCarthy. The name of his book is Superbugs, The Race to Stop an Epidemic. I want to do a little bit more history because it's fascinating. Scientists didn't fully realize the difference between bacteria and viruses for a long time. Why was that?
Yeah, you know, this came up. I was talking with some of my friends who are writers, and one of them said, wait, so a bacteria and a virus are different? And I said, well, of course they are. And it was one of those moments where I paused and said, you know, the world that I travel in is not necessarily the conversations I have with fellow doctors may not be the same conversations that patients are having and their understanding of what is out there. And that led me to down this path of thinking about, you know, why is there so much confusion when somebody has a sinus infection and they go to their doctor and ask for an antibiotic and the doctor says no? You know, I wanted to write a book where people can walk into the hospital feeling like they have an understanding of how doctors are making decisions and why you may be getting a toxic antibiotic like colistin, or why your doctor may be looking at you, seeing a fever, seeing an elevated white blood cell count and saying, no, you don't need an antibiotic. There's so much confusion about this, and I wanted to address some of the confusion, beginning with a very fundamental question of what's the difference between a bacteria and a virus. And to answer your question, viruses tend to be much more simplistic organisms. They can be something as simple as a strand of DNA or RNA, whereas bacteria are more sophisticated, and they have a number of different organelles, and they have things like these efflux pumps and porins and all kinds of interesting things that we as drug developers try to figure out how do we mess up the bacteria in ways that we can't affect the viruses.
All right, let's take a couple of calls, and I want to talk about the clinical trials that you're working on. Kathy is calling us from Lakewood, New Jersey. Hi, Kathy. What's your question for Dr. McCarthy?
Hi, thank you for taking my call. My question is, if you've used antibiotics on a very limited basis, are they, the current antibiotics, more effective for you rather than if you had used them regularly in the past?
Well, thank you for that question, Kathy. One of the things that we wrestle with is that every time we expose a human to antibiotics, the bacteria that live within inside of that human, those bacteria can mutate. So you may have a trillion bacteria living in your gut and on your skin. And if we give you amoxicillin for a strep throat, that's going to select out for drug-resistant bacteria. Every time we do this, there's going to be some tiny fraction that become resistant. So we can't predict that those bacteria will cause a problem, but it does cause a risk that you may end up having a drug-resistant pathogen in your body. Now, that's not going to necessarily ever cause you a problem, but when a doctor decides to withhold antibiotics, what they're weighing is the benefit of potentially clearing an infection versus the risk of affecting all of the other bacteria that live around you. So I see patients all the time who have been on antibiotics for 10 or 15 years, and when an infection pops up, they're bacteria is resistant to almost every drug we have. And that's why we're trying so desperately to come up with new treatments for people.
Thank you so much. Let's go to Susan, who's calling us from Brooklyn. Susan is online too. Hi, Susan. What's your question for Dr. McCarthy?
My main question was the article that appeared in the Times back on Saturday the 18th. I actually live in Florida, and I do know after reading this article that antibiotics are being used by some grove owners to treat citrus greening. And I'm actually concerned about that as a retired infection prevention nurse with a long career in that area, but mainly with hospital. And the other thing I wanted to ask him while listening to the previous caller was, how long does resistance in the gut remain after treatment with antibiotics? Is it forever, or is it something that over a long time or even a short time can disappear?
Well, those are two outstanding questions. I'll try to handle each one in sequence. So the question about the orange groves, you know, I'm from Florida, and I grew up drinking the Florida orange juice every morning. And so I recognize how complicated it is to maintain the oranges in the orange groves, but I am absolutely distraught at hearing the way that these antibiotics are being used. These are drugs that were designed to treat humans, and what I've written about in my book is not only how they're used in orange groves for food, but they're also used in tulip gardens in the Netherlands to maintain the appearance of the tulips, and we're finding that drug-resistant fungi are popping up in gardens all over the world. And so the next step really is for us to try to crack down on how these antibiotics are used. And I'll tell you another interesting area is with animals. There are some veterinarians who do not want to expose dogs and cats to some of our most precious antibiotics. And that opens up a whole can of worms when you think about, you know, your cat and what, you know, if the new drugs are necessary to treat your cat. And then addressing sort of the more broad picture of how we can come up with new treatments, I think that this issue is going to become the most important political issue that no one is talking about. And that in 2020, you're going to hear from a whole lot of politicians. And one of the questions that we need to ask all of them is to say, we know that the government is going to need to intervene here because this is a market failure. We need new antibiotics. What is your plan?
My guest is Dr. Matt McCarthy. We're going to take a quick break. And after the break, we'll hear a little bit about your clinical trials, what you're doing to try to help solve this issue. And by the way, Dr. McCarthy will be at Barnes & Noble at 82nd and Broadway tonight at 7 p.m. So if you don't get through on the line, you might want to go check him out tonight at Barnes & Noble. This is All of It on WNYC. We'll be back after a quick break.
WNYC supporters include the New Jersey Performing Arts Center, presenting Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix in concert with the full score performed live by the New Jersey Symphony Orchestra, Saturday, June 1st. Tickets at njpac.org. Ascend Public Charter Schools in Central Brooklyn, where each teacher's mission is to lead students on an intellectual adventure and prepare them for success in college and beyond. More information about career opportunities at ascendschools.org. WNYC is a media partner of the Rooftop Film Summer Series, an outdoor festival featuring indie films and live music all across the city. HBO's documentary, Running with Beto, screens May 25th on the roof of New Design High School. More at rooftopfilms.com.
WNYC is ready to kick off your summer fun on June 13th with a party at Brooklyn Bowl. All of your favorite WNYCers will be there. Brian Lehr, Richard Hake and Arun Venugopal from The Newsroom, Jen and Jake from Gothamist, and Jad Abumrad and me, Molly Webster, from Radiolab. It'll be fun. Best of all, it supports WNYC. I hope you'll join us Thursday, June 13th at 6:30. Tickets at wnyc.org/events.
Welcome back to All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, and I'm speaking with Dr. Matthew McCarthy, Assistant Professor of Medicine at Weill Cornell and a staff physician at New York Presbyterian Hospital. He's the author of a new book called Superbugs, The Race to Stop an Epidemic. Okay, so this it's interesting. So we have all the science and the history in the book, but then you also walk us through how you have to deal with patients who come in with these horrible infections and how you're going to treat them and how you're going to have conversations to get information about from them about how to treat them. And you are very dedicated in the book to trying to find a solution. So when you're talking to people, you're asking them about joining a clinical trial. Tell us a little about the clinical trial you're working on.
Yeah, so what I look at is every time a new antibiotic gets approved by the FDA, I try to figure out, will this help my patients? Should our hospital use it? And if so, how should we use it? And I thought that would be a great way to bring readers into the world of superbugs and drug discovery, just to show how complex this issue is and to give a really a 360-degree view of the problem. And so I bring people into the hospital, and you meet the patients suffering from these infections and talking to them about using a new drug that's, frankly, no one knows if it's going to work or not. It's something that had never been used in our hospital before. And what I was asking people was, would you be willing to try this? And one of the most powerful questions I got in return from a patient was, would you give this to your own mother? And that caught me. And I said, you know, based on what I know, I would. Yes, I would. But I talk about how I had to reflect on that. And, you know, these are people's lives. These are family members. And what I wanted to do was bring you in to see that when the FDA approves a new antibiotic, hospitals don't all just jump and stock it in their shelves. They have to figure out if, first of all, can you afford it? Some of these drugs cost thousands and thousands of dollars a dose and are only mildly more effective or even equivalent to the drugs that cost $40 a dose. And so what I look at are things called the pharmacoeconomics of these new drugs. And so I studied one for skin infections. And I said, I think we can improve the quality of care here with an expensive new drug. And that's what I wrote the book about. And that's exactly what we did.
You mentioned the considerations you take. And you're on the ethics committee at your Presbyterian Hospital. What are some of the ethical questions and considerations around antibiotics right now?
Oh, well, one of the big issues we have is how we should use them. Is it ethically appropriate to withhold drugs? I'll give you a scenario that comes up all the time. A patient in the hospital has a week to live, 2 weeks to live, and they're incidentally found to have a superbug, and it's unrelated to the issue that brought them into the hospital. And there are drugs that we can give them that would eradicate that infection, but the infection may not be the primary issue. And so you have clinicians who are saying, do I spend $10,000 worth of antibiotics on a patient who I think will probably not be around? Because not only do you have to think about that patient, every time you use those drugs, you're exposing bacteria in the community to the precious drugs we have, and so you could be promoting resistance. I'm not coming down one way or another on it. I just have noted that this is an ethical issue that I get asked about all the time from colleagues, of saying, how do I handle this situation? And as someone who's interested in medical ethics, I find this to be one of the great areas of investigation for us, is trying to figure out, with issues of futility and resource allocation, how do we treat the patient appropriately, but also protect everyone else in the environment?
Let's go to Josie in Westchester. Hi, Josie. What's your question for Dr. McCarthy?
I think, is this me?
This is you, Josie. Hi.
Oh, thank you so much. Hi. My late father, he passed 8 years ago. He had contracted MRSA in the hospital, and I was exposed to him, and then I was informed of my exposure and subsequently broke out. So at this point, I'm considered a carrier. I've learned a lot of home-type remedies that I use, and mostly I try to practice prevention. But what I'm wondering is, what can I do to bring my level of pathogens down and also not expose others? I pretty much sequester myself when I break out. It's my nose, and sometimes it'll go to my finger.
Right. Well, thank you for this question. This is a very sensitive subject and a very complex one. I had an op-ed in the New York Times yesterday that was about this very issue, that superbugs are now everywhere, and that even doctors and nurses are carrying MRSA in their nostrils. And, it breaks my heart to hear that you sequester yourself. And I think about how, you contract something in a hospital and it's affecting you years and years later. There are a number of treatments for this to decolonize yourself, things such as chlorhexidine. People try. There are all kinds of baths that people use. I will say that every patient is different, and I, hesitate to say this is how you can get rid of it yourself, but we have infectious disease specialists who focus on this kind of thing, of decontaminating environments, and it's one of the things that you can do to protect yourself. And I will tell you, I go into the hospital every day treating all kinds of infections, and we have very strict protocols that protect patients and protect staff. And when I go home at night to my two kids, I'm confident that I'm not putting them in danger by giving them a hug. And I would recommend that you reach out to your primary care doctor and infectious disease specialist, who can talk about the various strategies that we now have. And the good news is that because this is such an issue, there are new containment and eradication strategies that are coming out all the time.
Let's get one more question in here. Maya is calling us from New York City, and you have a question, Maya,
yes,
for Dr. McCarthy?
Great program. Brief two-parter. PBS's NewsHour had a segment on what seemed to be a great deal of devastation going on currently in the Congo with Ebola. So give us some thumbnail sketch of exactly what that is and about the recent vaccine. Lastly, particularly for Josie, are you familiar with Dr. Ingraham, who, when he stuck himself with a needle in practice, wound up with such a bad infection that the only thing that he discovered that would work was wild Mediterranean-grown wild oil of oregano? That he took a lot of it. It cured him. It could be a natural way to alleviate some intractable infections, and I'll listen over the air. Thank you so much.
Thank you. So the first question is Ebola? Yeah.
Well, this is quite a two-part question. I'm going to do my best to get to both of these. So I'll tell you, first thing when I wake up in the morning, the first email I have is from an infectious disease society that's updating us on what's going on in the Congo with the Ebola. It's an issue that seems to be getting worse, not better. because of the way that it's transmitted and it's so outrageously contagious. We do have a vaccine that we're working on, and I can tell you that from an ethics perspective, one of the things that I am very wary of and I think a lot about is when we test vaccines out on other countries, especially if it's in Africa. There is a long history of abuse in that area, and we have to be very careful to make sure that we get people the vaccines they need, but also to test them in a way that's responsible. The second question, you mentioned the needle stick, and I can tell you, I wrote a book that came out 4 years ago called The Real Doctor Will See You Shortly, and it was a part of it is about me sticking myself with HIV. I was drawing blood on a patient, and I mistakenly stuck a needle into my finger and drew blood, and I was suddenly put on a very complex medical regimen of all of the drugs that were used to treat HIV. And it's a very personal experience that I went through, and it was an agonizing experience, and it's actually the reason that I went into infectious diseases. And it's the reason that I'm writing about superbugs today, is that I went from being the doctor to the patient. And thankfully, everything worked out and I'm okay. But seeing things through the eyes of a patient with an infection and seeing how scary that was is exactly the reason that I wrote this book, Superbugs.
The name of the book is Superbugs, The Race to Stop an Epidemic. It's by Dr. Matt McCarthy. Dr. McCarthy will be at Barnes & Noble at 82nd and Broadway tonight at 7 p.m. Dr. McCarthy, thanks for coming in. It was really nice to meet you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Coming up, filmmaker and author John Waters talks about his new book, Mr. Know-It-All. You're listening to All of It on WNYC.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.